Hey, this is just a quick note about our sponsor, Privado, the premier enterprise privacy platform, purpose-built to bridge the gap between privacy and engineering. Its privacy code scanning solution embeds privacy, compliance, and governance into the product development lifecycle and empowers privacy and security teams with unparalleled visibility of sensitive data flows and the insights to find and fix privacy vulnerabilities. You can leverage Privado's data flows, dynamic data mapping, privacy assessment automation, and real-time visibility of privacy issues. Enter the era of proactive privacy and transform privacy from business blocker to business enabler. To learn more, go to privado.ai. Hello, I am Deborah J. Farber. Welcome to the Shifting Privacy Left podcast, where we talk about embedding privacy by design and default into the engineering function to prevent privacy harms to humans and to prevent dystopia. Each week, we'll bring you unique discussions with global privacy technologists and innovators working at the bleeding edge of privacy research and emerging technologies, standards, business models, and ecosystems. I hope all of you had a wonderful Thanksgiving this year if you celebrate. I know the holiday provides us with an opportunity to pause and reflect on the year and to express gratitude for the people and organizations who have helped us on our journey. This year, I want to express my sincere thanks for the existence of the Rise of Privacy Tech, a Silicon Valley-based organization led by today's guest, Lourdes Tarecha, that's driving forward global privacy innovation, gathering privacy tech ecosystem stakeholders for critical conversations, and publishing foundational thought leadership. I'm grateful for TROPT, as it's known for short, for my friendship and opportunities to collaborate with Lourdes, and for the opportunity to shape this growing field with other privacy technologists, founders, advisors, and investors. This week, Lourdes Tarecha and I discuss what inspired her to found TROPT, TROPT's free and paid offerings to the privacy tech community, how the buyers of privacy tech are currently navigating the space, how many privacy tech companies exist today, the release of the TROPT Privacy Tech Stack White Paper 2022, and more about the 2023 Data Privacy Week TROPT Conference that's taking place in late January. Enjoy the episode. Hello, Lourdes. Welcome.
Hi, Deborah. I'm so glad to be having this conversation with you. I always enjoy our conversations, but you're also a very good friend. So I'm so grateful to be here and to have this time with you today.
Oh my gosh. I've been waiting for this for so long, just to have a venue to platform you, because I'm just so excited about all the great work that TROPT has done. And for some of the people who don't know, who are listening in, I'm an advisor. I sit on the advisory board for the Rise of Privacy Tech. And so there's been so much that the organization's been working on for the past several years. And, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about TROPT's mission? You know, what is TROPT?
I'm happy to. Before I jump in, I just want to thank you for all the work and support that you've done for TROPT. TROPT wouldn't be TROPT without you. So for that, very grateful. And thank you for being one of our biggest supporters as one of our advisors. TROPT is the emerging privacy tech industry hub. We're the only organization that's focusing on privacy tech and innovation. There are a wide variety of amazing established privacy organizations out there, and I feel very confident that they're doing great work focusing on law and policy. To me, it just occurred to me that there wasn't really anyone focusing on the tech side of privacy, and it is for that reason that we created TROPT to fuel this emerging privacy tech industry space.
Awesome. That's helpful. So what is exactly like what are the offerings? What does TROPT provide for the community? How does it go about helping with the mission of getting privacy tech and innovation featured and more of a focus on it in the industry?
That's a great question. And we have two main buckets, and what those buckets cover really depends on what we hear from our community members. So we have a bucket of free resources. The white paper is one of them. I'll talk more about the white paper later, but as a reminder, we'll put a pin on that and then get to that. We also have free resources for early stage startups to connect privacy tech startups with advisors. So we have a startup advisor matching thing resource. We also have a startup investor matching resource. And the way that works is we have a huge network of domain experts in privacy who can help build privacy tech solutions. And there are many founders who are looking for that domain expertise because they may not be coming from the privacy domain. And so we have a sign-up form for them. And we do this every Friday. It's on my calendar. I look to see if there's an emerging startup that is looking for an advisor. And if there's a match, I make an intro. And in the future, as we scale, that wouldn't be so manual anymore. My hope is that that becomes a more of an automated resource for folks to just self-serve. So that's an example of our first bucket of free resources. We also have excellent talks from past events are available on our website, our LinkedIn site, our YouTube site. And these include a wealth of insights given the caliber of speakers and domain experts and key players in privacy tech that engage with us at our events. And then when it comes to paid offerings, we're really testing it out. So depending on the day, the answer is a little bit different, but we've always had events. That was how we started, because we started in the middle of the pandemic and people needed a way to come together. And that wasn't an easy thing to spin out for the community. We still have them. Our flagship and biggest event is Data Privacy Week, and I'm happy to chat about that as well at some point later. And we also had our first in-person one in June, which was the Trope Summit. And, you know, if there are enough folks in the community who want us to keep doing those things, we're happy to continue to do those things. But like I was saying earlier, it's really what the community wants, and we respond to what they say they want and do our best to put together the things that the industry sorely needs. We also just spun out a review program, and this was inspired by buyers who just couldn't find good privacy tech solutions because there's so much noise. And they complained about how frustrated they were about the marketing speak and lists out there that don't vet privacy tech solutions. So we have the Trope Privacy Tech Stack Review Program, where bonafide buyer users review products, privacy tech products, before we feature them. And that's been our rule because you and I, as former buyers, have been in that position where we end up wasting so much time that we don't really have as privacy professionals sitting on going into a rabbit hole in different tools that, you know, only to find out that they don't have a product yet or they don't have a functionality that they had promised in the past. And so that's one of the offerings that we're recently just making available to the community. And the review is a paid review, and that's because we pay our users for their time. And we also, of course, have to pay Trope team members to do the operations and back end for that.
And that makes a lot of sense. And I'm so excited to have this episode where we can connect what the rise of privacy tech is doing to this audience that I'm building, which is really meant for privacy technologists, privacy engineers, even designers. You know, that left side of what we'll talk about later as being the Trope privacy tech stack, you know, before code is ever published, you know, the shifting left into the space of where you could actually protect the data before it ever gets shared or published anywhere. And what I really want to ask you now, I guess, is you talked about what some of the offerings are and the mission for Trope, but give us a little sense of what the size of the market is. And when I say that, I guess what I'm asking is, how many privacy tech companies out there are there? You know, like, to the layperson who's not watching this as closely as we are, you know, it's really not that clear.
Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, loyal listeners. The Shifting Privacy Left podcast is seeking sponsors who want to help educate our growing community of privacy engineers. Position your brand in front of privacy engineers, architects, developers, researchers, and privacy tech buyers. Insert a 30 to 60 second ad like this one into every published episode of the podcast. This is dynamic content, after all. Feature your new product, an upcoming conference, a sponsored special deal, endless opportunities. Email sponsorship@shiftingprivacyleft.com for more information on our sponsorship package. Okay, let's get back to our engaging privacy conversation.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's one of the things that we cover in the white paper. And I'm happy to announce, and share a few numbers that we include in the white paper. And for those who want to dig in further, I'll send Deborah the link and maybe we can include them in the show notes. It's exciting because, last year there were about 945 self-identified privacy companies. This is according to Crunchbase, which is, as everyone in tech knows, is the go-to when it comes to startup data. That said, Crunchbase doesn't vet these self-identifying privacy companies. And so you kind of have to keep that in mind, right? Like they're not doing the review that we do at Trope. That said, it still means a lot that, last year there were about 945 of those. And this year there are 1,167 privacy companies. So that's 222 in the past year alone. And same thing when it comes to investments. In 2021, there was $1.6 billion of funding towards privacy companies. And 2022 hasn't ended yet, and we've already surpassed 2021 numbers. So right now we have $1.7 billion in funding so far as of the publication of the white paper last Friday. I haven't checked today, but I suppose we could take a look in a little bit, which means like in the aggregate total in this very nascent space, which has only been in existence for, a few years, there's already been $7.3 billion so far, and 1.7 of that is from this year and 1.6 from last year.
I mean, those are really impressive numbers. And you really highlighted an important point before that there are lists of privacy tech companies out there. But, if you're a chief security officer, chief privacy officer, a data protection officer, an analyst, anyone in the field, privacy technologist, and you go and you look at these lists, I mean, it's overwhelming, right? I mean, there are, it's hard to tell if it's a security company that's just pitching as a privacy, has a privacy feature, or is some overlapping, security for privacy, like confidentiality feature that they're just pitching as privacy to kind of cut through the noise in the security space and get maybe heard somewhere else. Like, how are buyers navigating the space right now? I don't want to say before Troped, but how are they navigating the space when all they have are like lists of companies and they certainly can't have interviews and demos and POCs and such from like 1,167 companies, right? How do they narrow it down today? Are you hearing from them of how they're approaching the space?
That question really nails on the head the frustration that many privacy tech buyer users have, especially in the B2B space. And have had in the past few years, given the noise. And what they end up sharing with us is that there are a couple of big players and that's all they hear about, ends up being such a frustrating thing for them because they don't know who's doing really what aside from a couple of big players. And they end up kind of being very inefficient about it. And that's really what inspired me. They end up reaching out to their network and we're kind of trying to do that putting that in a hub, right? Like as opposed to them reaching out to me or you, Deb, or any one of their colleagues in the space and asking who's using what for this type of category for consent management or privacy code or other types of categories. We want to make that available in a, through the Trope Privacy Tech Stack website. And so it's just been a very manual way of them trying to figure out what everyone else is looking at. And that's really the story of privacy tech, even internally, right? Like everything has been manual for years and It reflects internally. It also reflects in the industry as when it comes to finding solutions. But we're hoping to start changing that with the Trip Privacy Tech Stack review program.
Awesome. And as the industry's been evolving, an interesting trend that I know we're both seeing is that we're finding that innovation is often coming from engineers who've been in a particular company, saw a particular problem, think they have a better way of executing or addressing that problem, and then go and start a privacy tech company. But one of the challenges they seem to have is that they don't necessarily know the industry as a whole. They don't necessarily know the different personas of the buyers or even how to message what it is they're doing. And so how does Trope help the industry with that uncertainty? How do they help the founders in that area?
That is such an excellent question. And before I dig into the how, I want to highlight the importance of that question. As we've seen in the startup space, it's critical for the founding team to understand the area that they're trying to solve for. I believe it's Y Combinator that lists one of the three factors that they look into is whether or not the founding team are the right set of people to solve a particular problem. And I think that's part of what we're trying to do here at Trope. Not all founders have that background in privacy, and they don't necessarily have to, but they at least need to have someone on their team, on their advisory board, who can help them make up for the lack of past privacy domain experience. And one of the things that we do here is we bridge that gap through, you know, the advisory, the startup advisor matching tool. We also have different sets of offerings, like our in-person summit really helps with that for the startups that want to get engaged for that in-person summit that we have every June. Really tailor the people that we bring to that to meet the types of personas that could be helpful to them as advisors, as buyers, as investors. And that's another way that we do that. We also have similar things like other types of smaller events that are more private and not necessarily like a public conference. We have dinners where we do the same thing and we connect the startups that want to be involved in those and engage Trope to the domain experts who can help them design their products, sell them, market them, and so forth. So those are some of the ways that we're doing that, Trope. And then obviously this challenge we highlight and kind of just put it out in the forefront. We talked about it in last year's white paper. One of the key players that we quote, one of our Trope visionaries, Ray Everett, also highlights this challenge, right? He, as one of the first CPOs in the world, and also someone who has helped build privacy tech from the very early stages, he highlighted the need for startups to be very much in tune with their buyer users' realities. And one way that they can do this is by engaging domain experts as part of their founding team or as advisors.
That's really helpful. Thanks. And I, you know, Ray is amazing. I worked for Ray for over a year and a half when I was at TrustDark, and we got to share a office together. And it was probably the most fun I've ever had sharing an office before with the first chief privacy officer ever. And I learned so much from him as a result. So I'm just glad you brought him up. That's really, really helpful, I think, to the industry. And, you know, you've mentioned the white paper several times. So why don't we turn our attention to that? The Rise of Privacy Tech, just today's the 21st of November. And so it was last Friday that we released the Trope Privacy Tech Stack 2.0 white paper. Tell us, what's the purpose for it? Like, who's it for? And then we'll dive into some of like the meaty parts.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So the recently published white paper, this year's white paper, is the follow-up to our foundational white paper from 2021, which defined, categorized, and started bridging the gaps in the privacy tech space. A lot of the work was really done last year with, you know, defining privacy tech, kind of comparing them with often conflated terms. comparing the industry to adjacent industries and so on and so forth, and introducing the TROPE privacy tech stack as a framework for categorizing privacy tech products. And this year we did that, and we've always said that the stack was going to be a living framework, and that's what we did. We evolved that framework this year to reflect feedback from the community, from the industry changes and trends that we're seeing here at TROPE and through our working group. So that's now the focus of this year's white paper. And secondarily, we also brought, as like we did last year, we brought a lot of insights from the forefront of the privacy tech space, from leading practitioners, buyers, domain experts in the space. And it's really for anyone who is remotely interested in privacy tech, but especially for privacy tech key players, which we've identified as the founders, the privacy tech founders, investors. You know, it can be an angel investor or VC firm that's interested in investing privacy tech, the domain experts who are innovative and forward-thinking and want to get involved as angel investors, as buyers or board advisors, or even co-founders. We have a handful of domain experts in privacy who pulled the trigger and started building their own privacy tech startups and to solve for privacy problems through tech. So those are the people, those are some of the big areas that we were dealing with or highlighted in the white paper. And I'm happy to, you know, if you have questions about any of the sections, we started with the stack and evolving that. And then we have a section on trends and buyer wish lists and the future of visions for the future of privacy tech. I'm happy to dig deep as well and chat more about those.
Yeah. I mean, so first I want to point out to the audience that this is a first of its kind landscape for privacy tech, and really talk about what is not privacy tech and what is, what's adjacent to it, what overlaps. So it's even broader than you might think at a landscape level, where, you know, my belief that this is going to help the industry mature because it categorizes the different privacy tech or privacy first technologies that are coming out of the labs, or whether it's a privacy enhancing technology or it's just new methodologies and approaches and new architectures. What we've really done here with this white paper is categorize the different types of privacy tech so that the market has a better understanding for what privacy tech means.
Also visually illustrate the bigger picture, because like you and I have talked to investors who just think of privacy tech as some small category in cybersecurity, which is first wrong, right? Yes. And secondly, has important implications for fueling privacy tech, for funding privacy tech in general. Because if you're an investor and if you just think of privacy tech as this one small category that's a part of cybersecurity, first, you couldn't be more wrong, but you could also, you know, you miss out on opportunities for your fund to look at the bigger picture and see opportunities to build and invest in some really exciting privacy technologies that are coming up.
I agree. You know, it strikes me about a year and a half ago when I started to, you know, really just become an analyst, if you will. I mean, it's not a formal title or anything, but of the industry, and start, like you, speaking to hundreds of different people about the state of the industry. I spoke to, you know, several VCs, and a lot of them really, you know, one in particular was like, you know, we already invested in two privacy tech companies, so we don't think that there's a need for more privacy out there than these two companies. And I'm like, that is the most limited. It really opened my eyes to how limited a view that even those who have invested in some privacy tech companies out there do not even realize how much opportunity and how much need in the market is there, because their view of what constitutes privacy and data protection was so narrow. And so that really opened my eyes as to, you know, how much TROPE can move the needle forward for the industry by helping just simply define some of these things. Yeah. So to that end, like, let's get into it a little bit. Like, we've separated the categories out into B2B privacy tech and B2C privacy tech categories? Or, you know, do you mind kind of explaining like the thought process there? And then, you know, also maybe about the left side on the right side of the tech stack.
Very happy to. So this year, like last year, we first separated the privacy tech industry according to business model. So the B2B side is the more mature side. And then we have the B2C side, the consumer facing side, which isn't quite as mature, but is actually interestingly and excitingly starting to catch up and gain momentum. So that's one of the trends that we highlighted in this year's white paper. And then there are a couple of B2B2C that startups that serve both consumers and businesses, but that's probably the smallest area of the space. I do want to focus on the B2B side because it's the more mature side. That's also where I come from. I've worked mostly with B2B companies. And the way we think about the space is we didn't reinvent the wheel. We depended on existing privacy and technology frameworks. So we picked two in particular. So the data lifecycle is probably one of the life cycles that's very much known to not just privacy professionals, but security and data governance professionals. And that's broken down into the collection stage, use, sharing, storage, and retention stage. And we thought about highlighting and categorizing based on that because there are, you know, we want to see solutions for these different points of data collection at retention because those are big problem areas for in-house privacy professionals. That said, one of the exciting things that we're seeing is the shift left privacy trend. And for that reason, we ended up also adding the development lifecycle, which is, you know, the process by which technologies are developed. I mean, folks are probably familiar with the software development lifecycle. We didn't necessarily hone in on just software because there are other types of products. And so we left it at a high level and picked the development lifecycle, which is also has different stages from requirements and design and build to verification, production, and so on. And we thought that similarly, it was important to identify products that are solving for privacy problems during the development lifecycle, the same way that, you know, it was very important to find solutions to privacy problems after data is collected. But we do want to be proactive. So the earlier we solve, the earlier we shift left, the easier it's going to be to tackle the, you know, mounting privacy tech that we've incurred.
Yeah. And that kind of makes sense, right? I mean, at first it's like, oh, the big data economy, collect as much data as possible. And then all these rules, you know, mostly led by GDPR and then other regulations that followed are required, you know, provide all these rights to know about what data is being collected about you. And so the very first things were, okay, let's make those rights happen, right? Like that's where companies had to focus to comply. And you started to see all this explosion of companies that were doing data discovery to find all the data across your organization and then like not put the genie back in the bottle, but at least get some sort of like view into what that data is and ability to provide that back or delete it or, you know, protect it in a certain way. But with the shift left mentality, it's let's prevent the data sprawl from ever happening in the first place with good data governance, with tools, with engineering tools, so that surface risks with, you know, so many different categories, actually. Do you mind being able to list out, I guess, some of the B2B categories that we were looking at?
Oh, absolutely. I don't mind at all. So in the data lifecycle, we have tracker scanners, so different tools that you could use to scan for trackers on your websites and your apps and your IoT environment physically, I suppose. There are notice delivery and consent managers. There's DSRs or data subject rights, and then privacy enhancing technologies. And we kind of broke that into two buckets of different types of PETs. I think this, the biggest part is probably, or the most mature part, and due to global data protection laws, is the privacy program management and workflow automation bucket. A couple of the bigger players have gone on record to say that that laws like GDPR in the EU is really what inspired them to build their startup to provide solutions for privacy professionals that are managing compliance. And, you know, that's an important category. Like you and I were saying, it's a great start, and that was absolutely like a much needed category, but we also want to be proactive and shift left. But going on, other categories in the data lifecycle includes data governance, security for privacy, vendor management for privacy, identity management for privacy, and then marketing and advertising tools for privacy. And these last few ones that I mentioned that has for privacy as part of their category names are really categories that intersect with the adjacent spaces. They are not purely just solving for, you know, privacy problems. They might also be solving for adjacent problems like security problems and data governance problems. So that's the data lifecycle of the B2B space, the most mature part of the privacy tech landscape. And then on the development lifecycle side, we have some exciting dev ops types of tools that include, you know, privacy requirements libraries and code scanners and so on. We also have excellent training for developers, right? Like most developers don't know privacy 101 or fundamentals of privacy. And so it's going to be hard for them to build products that respect privacy if they don't know that. So there are some exciting privacy by design, privacy engineering training platforms that are coming up. There are also some DSR tools that are trying to solve for DSRs and embed those into the product. So at the code level, and there are also privacy enhancing technologies for developers like trusted execution environments and synthetic data that they can use during testing as opposed to testing on real data, which creates privacy risks. So those are some of the categories. I hope I didn't go too long in enumerating all of them. But anyone wants to dig in, they can look at the white paper or also the website. I failed to mention that we launched a website, right? The white paper was published, and so we don't want to keep waiting a year. So there is a living website that is going to start updating the tech stack throughout the year, as opposed to waiting every, you know, once a year to do that.
I think that'll be really helpful to the general privacy technologist community, privacy tech community, as a place that they can bookmark the current landscape for privacy tech. So that'll be helpful for them, I'm sure.
And we want their feedback too. It's a, like we keep saying, it's a living framework, and we want you to get involved. We will have breakout working groups. So if you're particularly passionate about like pets or privacy code scanners or the program suite of tools, join, you know, we invite them to join the breakout working groups for next year.
I mean, I think that's a great point to stop and say, if you are in any way interested, you being the audience, are in any way interested in privacy tech, you know, go right now to the Rise of Privacy Tech's website, which is
riseofprivacytech.com.
There you go. And become a member, you know, or sign up to at least receive emails or a newsletter or, you know, attend the conference for International Data Privacy Week, which is in January, at the end of January, you know, participate, sponsor, if you're a founder, become a member. I mean, the Rise of Privacy Tech is the hub where you should be plugging in to understand and knowledge share with others, right? We've got a Slack group that's pretty active. We've got, you know, there's a lot going on. And again, I think knowledge sharing is a key part to community building. So, you know, it's hard to do that if you're not actually participating with others in the industry. And so I guess what I really want to understand now is, what are some of the biggest challenges that we have in privacy tech right now? I know in the white paper, I urge everyone to read the white paper because there's a lot more information in there in the 53 pages than what we are talking about here. But for highlights, you've listed out 5 challenges.
Yeah. And I think I'll highlight a couple and I'll pick the big ones. The first one is really, you know, this is directly from privacy tech buyer users. And the first one is really solutions or privacy, quote unquote, privacy tech tools that fail to solve privacy pain points. So I guess by definition, they're not technically privacy tech if they don't solve any. It's rare that that actually happens, though. So I think
that a company pitches their solution as being privacy tech, but it's more regulatory, like accountability solution, or
I think it might. I think it's less of a black and white and more of the degree to which they solve or the scope of which they're solving privacy problems. So it might be that, you know, as buyers like RingCentral Chief Privacy Officer Paolo Zeni, and again, Ray Everett, who's one of the first chief privacy officers of the internet era, highlight that most startups know about like a problem area, and then they just start building a solution there. And what ends up happening is that they, quote unquote, built a data discovery solution or something similar that seems like a hot category. But when buyers look under the hood, they're not actually solving for a lot of use cases. They're only targeting very limited use cases. So a good example of that is, you know, startups that might solve for data discovery when it comes to SaaS solutions, but don't really do that for any of the proprietary and legacy systems that actually have like a lot more risk because they're less governed. And so sometimes we see, you know, rarely there are startups that, like you're saying, might be purely security, and now they want to look at the privacy space and see if they can put a spin to it. But I think what buyers, when I talk to buyers anyway, they're really complaining about startups that might solve for like one use case when the pain points are like cover like 25 use cases. And that's hard, right? Like that's difficult for buyers to find out later on. And I hope that they don't find out later on after they've bought the product. I mean, that's what POCs and demos are for. But that's one of their biggest frustrations is like the products that don't solve enough of their pain points and like specific use cases of their pain points and only do it for a limited use cases.
Got it. And that was the first challenge, right?
Yeah.
We've got five altogether. Got five. So what's another one?
Yeah, another one is integration and interoperability. That was big last year. And it's an interesting one because coming from the adjacent and more mature cybersecurity industry, like they do such a great job when it comes to integrations and interoperability, but they're still not 100%. And so I guess I don't know that we'll ever get to 100% either in privacy tech. We just need to keep upping the number, right? Like the progress every year when it comes to tools that are built to integrate with existing systems and then interoperate with other privacy tech products.
Yeah, I'd imagine that rather than integrating with just a random privacy tech vendor that they don't know if it's going to be around, you know, next year because it's still a nascent space, I guess we'll be watching to see, you know, which ones make it really successful, you know, in the market. And then once they achieve a certain level of success, that's when other privacy tech vendors then will go, oh, we've got to integrate with that because so many buyers are already using it. And if we don't, they're not going to buy what we're selling. So it might just be a part of the, you know, maturation stage that we're in for privacy tech.
Right. Yeah, that could be part of it. Yeah. And it's, you know, these are startups. So it's very, you know, I do get that they have to be efficient and pick the projects that they take on. This includes building integrations. And so that's part of the challenge is that they don't have unlimited resources. And, you know, this is probably integration and interoperability is probably not on their top priority. Probably prioritizing integrations more over interoperability. But even in the integration space, it seems like, you know, there are buckets of technologies that they're unable to integrate with. It's easy to integrate with SaaS solutions that have APIs and others, but it's harder to kind of build one-off integrations for legacy systems.
Right. We've seen that as a challenge for a long time with like banks and insurance providers and
yes,
universities or, you know, who have older systems for sure. even government. Okay, what's challenge number three?
Budget, really. I mean, it's not all on the startups. Part of the problem is also, I mean, we all have a role to play. So part of the problem lies with buyer users who don't embrace privacy tech, or even if they do, who don't know how to advocate for and secure a budget for privacy tech. And so, you know, one of the more innovative CPOs and forward-thinking CPOs out there, in my opinion, Dr. Stuart Lee, who is VMware's chief privacy officer, shared a call to action in the white paper for our community of privacy professionals, especially the in-house ones, to embrace privacy technologies. Because, you know, I get how, for various reasons, it might quote unquote seem easy to do the manual approach. It's actually not. That's harder, but might be familiar, I guess is the better word. But it's a lot of manual work that's not interesting work. If you want, there's so many exciting, interesting privacy issues. And you, as a privacy professional, I would want to focus on those and not do manual DSRs or manually chase people internally to get them to fill out forms for my ROPA spreadsheets. And so I agree with Stuart's call to action. Like, this is, privacy tech is one way for us to scale and get better as a domain.
Absolutely. I mean, and at a certain point, it's impossible to do it manually. I mean, if you're a huge enterprise, like, I just imagine, just pick any of the FANG companies. And I know it's no longer FANG since Facebook is Meta and there's an M there. But, yeah. You know, for those organizations, for those organizations, like, there's just no way that you could process all the data subject access requests manually. Like, that's just, you know, a fool's errand. And I, you know, which is why they're not doing it manually. So, you know,
people make mistakes.
And if you do it manually, there's definitely room for human error. Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a certain threshold where, yeah, I'm doing kind of work I don't like, but, you know, it's part of my job to do maybe some of this manual work, right? That just goes out the window once at scale. It would just be impossible, right? You just can't even have people do that manual anymore, given the sheer numbers. So it's interesting to kind of watch the market for that. And then, so what's the fourth challenge?
So the fourth challenge is something that we already covered, and it's, you know, that there aren't enough privacy domain experts in this space. I mean, if we want to build privacy tech and good privacy tech that's responsive to the pain points out there, we need more privacy domain experts to join in and help build. I mean, they don't necessarily have to start their own startups. They can do it by becoming an advisor, by becoming an employee at a privacy tech company, by angel investing in a privacy tech company, or if they have the right means, or if they're the right stage in their careers, and then obviously, like, start one, build one. But I do get that that's not available for everyone. So that's one of the big challenges, but there are so many ways to get involved, depending on your level of where you are in your career, but also like the amount of time that you have. So you can do it as a buyer by just giving feedback to the industry and articulating your pain points and all of that. I don't want to spend a lot of time there because I'm really excited about the last challenge. And I would love for you to tell us about it because you are the domain expert that we highlighted when it came to the last challenge.
Okay, so the last challenge is that the privacy tech industry has to deal with the privacy invasive status quo.
And I think you, I mean, I kind of put that more at a high level, but I think your point about big tech in particular is an important one. And I'd love for you to kind of share that with the listeners because I know it's something that you're very passionate about.
Thank you. Yeah. So, you know, the status quo has been that we use advertising to feed the internet economy. And as a result, that has turned into what we all affectionately, or I don't want to say affectionately, but we all now come to know as surveillance capitalism. And, you know, we're at a point now where the general population feels like there's nothing that they can do. It's almost like a slow boiled frog where they didn't realize up front the devil's bargain of making the internet free, but in exchange for personal data. was going to end up being more of a big brother, knowing about all your actions, what you do, trying to divine, you know, what you're thinking, mind reading, everything from search terms to, you know, what are you putting into search and try to figure out what it is you want to see and thus what ads do you want, maybe buy from. And, you know, to basically based on our behavior, you know, following us around the internet and collecting data about users when they don't really have any concept of who's collecting the data, for what purpose, is it nefarious, is it for good purpose reasons, and whatnot. And so people are at a point now where they're like, I don't think privacy can get any, you know, I don't think I'll ever have privacy because this is the state of the world. And while we've been trying to fight that from within organizations, and I know one of my challenges has been that I often was put, you know, I chose organizations where I can make good change, but was thwarted from making that change because the organization didn't really want change. They just wanted to have someone in the privacy role and say, you know, that they, they're addressing it and that Deborah go assure them that it's been addressed. So what I'm seeing now, though, where I'm playing more of this analyst role, also advisor and all that, but I'm not working within the organizations at this moment. I am trying to push along with Tropt, right? What the vision should be. What I am seeing is that there are a plethora of founders who left these big tech companies that were, you know, really, again, just built on advertising and tracking people. And they're seeing, hey, you know what? I could go create, I don't know, the guy, like major VP or SVP at Google is like, I'm going to go start Neva, the privacy enabling search engine, right? That doesn't do all that advertising and collection about you. Or you'll see organizations like Brave doing a privacy first browser that is definitely, if they show advertising, they're not telling, you know, they're not tracking who you are, and they are building privacy in by design through the engineering process, through using new tools from cryptographic techniques to just data minimization philosophies, right? So we're seeing a lot of that. The status quo is ripe for disruption. And there are people who are building right now to disrupt those legacy organizations. And I want to say that I've never been so optimistic about privacy in my 17 years because I see what's coming. Like we, you know, you and I, we have a lens into what is now and what is coming and what we think should be and where we were to a degree that others might not. And, you know, that is a part that keeps me doing this work because the tools and the new techniques and the new tech stacks, whether it's cloud or XR or, you know, I'm just thinking industries, like, I know I'm kind of mixing metaphors here, but, you know, no matter where, you know, Web3, right, there's all of these new tech stacks where you already have plenty of developers working on these tech stacks, learn, you know, gaining knowledge from them, new protocols being developed, new standards being developed for interoperability between these new tech stacks. Like all of that's happening right now to ends that involve more privacy preserving, more trust, more assurances, more transparency. And, you know, let's just say that the status quo needs to be disrupted and it is being disrupted. We see that with what's going on in the market today. We just don't have enough time to unpack it all. I feel like I could just talk for hours on this topic, but thank you for letting me talk about challenge number five.
I love how passionate you are about it. And I'm always, you know, excited when you voice those opinions that many of our colleagues don't feel comfortable voicing because they're probably still employed by some of those, by the status quo. And I don't blame them, obviously. Like everyone has, you know, they need to have a job or they have family. So I get that part. But it's, you know, inspiring to me that you or giving voice to what a lot of people are only thinking or are too afraid to articulate out there. So,
well, thank you, Lourdes. And you inspire me for starting like the Rise of Privacy Tech, really being the momentum that's keeping it going. While I'm I'm an advisor, a participant, part of the working groups, part of this white paper, without you moving this along, it would not exist. We would not even be having this conversation. And just my hat's off to you. I know you don't like being just, you know, Tropt is not Lourdes Terecha, but Tropt would not exist without Lourdes Terecha.
Thank you. I appreciate that And thank you. It's also probably a personal thing where I have to get more comfortable just being gracious and accepting of compliments. So
don't we all, right?
Yeah. So thank you for that. That fills my spirit, to you saying that it means a lot coming from you. So yeah, thank you.
Of course, of course. Now, I know we're getting towards the end of our conversation, but you've mentioned, you know, we've mentioned several times that there's this Trope Data Privacy Week event.
It's exciting. I mean, you've been to the last couple ones and
it's really well attended and a lot of great content over 2 days.
And amazing people, you know, like the caliber of speakers that we have are, they're just the best in the industry. And I'm so honored that they would want to spend Data Privacy Week with us and share their insights to help fuel this space. So to everyone, you know, who might be listening and have gotten involved, I thank you. And please, guys, get involved again. Our call for speakers is still open and we still have Genius Bird registration, which means you can register for free until November 30.
Now, so this episode is going to come out on November 29th. So that gives everybody about 24 hours. But what will the price be if that there's a next tier, right? Like,
yeah, it will be tiered pricing, which will go up to $49 for early bird.
Still totally reasonable.
Please be a genius, a genius bird instead, and just like try to get a free ticket. And then it'll be tiered $49.99, $149. I don't think it goes up further than, don't quote me on this, I think $299, I think is what it's the highest at, which is nothing, I think. I mean, it's not nothing, but compared to others, it's, I think,
it's a totally reasonable rate. But for what everyone needs to know is you have 24 hours from the time that this is published to go and get a free ticket to the Rise of Privacy Tech's virtual 2-day event.
Or submit your talk.
Or submit your talk. So when are talk proposals due?
Same day.
November 30th?
Yes.
Okay. So you have 24 hours to submit your talk. And then I don't know, I doubt you have a limit on it, but sponsorships are open and available.
Yeah, they're open and available. We usually onboard sponsors up until like 3 to 4 weeks before an event. So you guys get it in. We are talking to prospective sponsors now and have a couple DocuSigns out there. So let us know. It's kind of like there are different tiers of sponsorship, of course, but if you're in the same tier, we give, you know, prime speaking spot to the first one that signs, right? Because it's earlier. And so we want to make sure that they get, you know, like a good speaking time and a good speaking spot at the event.
So don't wait. You want to be in a better order to get a better speaking slot, I guess.
Yes. You don't want to do any last minute, like trying to figure out what's a good time to speak when most of the prime speaking slots are taken.
Indeed. Well, Lourdes, I want to thank you so much for joining us. It was really a pleasure.
My pleasure.
on Shifting Privacy Left, which is, you know, so in line with all the work that the Rise of Privacy Tech does, and even a trend that the white paper highlights.
Exactly.
Until Tuesday, everyone, when we'll be back with engaging content with another great guest. Thanks for joining us this week on Shifting Privacy Left. Make sure to visit our website, shiftingprivacyleft.com, where you can subscribe to updates so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found this episode valuable, go ahead and share it with a friend. And if you're an engineer who cares passionately about privacy, check out Privato, the developer-friendly privacy platform and sponsor of this show. To learn more, go to privato.ai. Be sure to tune in next Tuesday for a new episode. Bye for now.